This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep. 7 months after a tsunami struck South and Southeast Asia, the reconstruction efforts continue. And this morning, we're returning to one town in the devastated Indonesian province of Aceh. NPR's Michael Sullivan has been periodically visiting Pukenbada. It was virtually destroyed and lost more than half of its 20,000 people in the tsunami.
Samiruddin and his wife Rohani aren't going back to Pukenbada, not now anyway. They are more comfortable here, at her mother's house, in a small village near the mountains, several miles from the sea. They came here the day after the tsunami. Rohani has always been uneasy with the idea of going back, but Samiruddin always insisted they would, as soon as possible. Now he's not so sure.
I grew up there, and all my family was there. But now it is too quiet. There are not many people there. And sometimes, when I go back, I feel uneasy. I cannot explain it.
But he does go back, just about every day, to take his 10-year-old son Yusuran to school, the school he used to attend before the tsunami. The boy says he tried to go to school here, in his grandmother's village, but it wasn't the same.
I just like it at my old school better, because I have my old teacher and my old friends there. I met some new friends here, but I'm shy, so it was hard for me here.
His mother says he used to make up all sorts of excuses to skip school here. Now that he's back at his old school in Pukenbada, he hasn't missed a day.
Ada pula.
Yeah. The building that housed the school was washed away. For now, the students make do inside a large tent provided by UNICEF. Next door, workers are busy on the new school. Yusuran's teacher, Fitria, says it should be finished by September.
When we started school again in late February, only one child came for the whole first week. Then more started coming. Now we have between 30 and 50 coming every day, depending on the weather.
That's just a fraction of the 300 students who used to come here. The rest were swept away, as were half the school's 20 teachers. Fitria says it was hard for the students right after the tsunami, and sometimes, she says, it's hard still.
I know they are doing better, but sometimes they don't seem to want to study. Before, they studied seriously. Now, they don't seem to be able to focus as much. They seem distracted. But at recess, they seem like normal children. They run around laughing and smiling, and this makes us happy.
7 months on, most of the tented camps are now gone, replaced with temporary wooden barracks like this one in Pukenbada, where workers spread gravel in the courtyard to keep down the dust and the mud. The barracks are better than the tents many used for shelter before, but for many months the barracks seemed the only structures being built, and many who lived in them were angry, accusing the government of dragging its feet on providing permanent homes, even as foreign NGOs were eager to begin building. During our last visit to Pukenbada in May, 39-year-old Fatmawati complained bitterly. She's not complaining now.
Forget about what I talking before, because the situation is like more better than before.
Better, she says, because the government and the NGOs are now working together. She's been promised a new house by August, and she says she believes that promise will be kept. Fatmawati, who lost two daughters to the tsunami, has now gone back to work. She says it's time for her to stop being sad.
It doesn't work for me. I must get up soon and to build my future again. I think like this.
Her neighbor in the barracks, 25-year-old Rosdini, says her new house is almost finished. Built by a South African Islamic charity, Al Indat, all it needs is a door. But Rosdina says she is a bit reluctant to leave the barracks. I can't tell you when I'll actually move, she says. I'm pretty happy here. There are a lot of us here, and we all know each other, and we keep an eye on each other. There aren't many houses yet where my new house is, she says, and so there aren't many people either. So I'm a little worried, and when I go there and the wind blows, I'm afraid. Close to the water, the wind is blowing pretty strong, but 31-year-old Marceline seems unconcerned as he unlocks the door to his newly completed home and shows a visitor inside. He's built the one-room wooden house on the foundation of his old home with his own money and, for the tin roof, with a little help from a friend. From the window, there's a clear view of Mount Salawa in the distance.
Sekarang pemandangannya mungkin indah kok. Kita lihat arah utara.
The view wasn't very good before the tsunami, he says. Too many houses and trees in the way. Now he says he's got a clear view of the mountains and the ocean. Achani's humor was dark even before the tsunami. Now it's darker still. A small battered TV and DVD player sit in the corner. They're powered by a small generator outside and help keep him company at night. Marceline lost his entire family, parents, wife, and two small children, to the tsunami.
I'm getting a little work, but not enough. I'd have more if I could buy a truck to replace the one I lost in the tsunami. But things are getting better. More people coming back, more houses being built. It'll take some time, maybe 5 years. But I think things can be normal again.
No longer in a tent or the barracks, Marceline says he's even given thought to starting a new family. But without a steady job, he says, it will be difficult to support one. And there is another challenge, too. A disproportionate number of those killed by the tsunami were women. And many widowers, like Marceline, now face stiff competition for the eligible women who remain.
It's going to be much harder, no doubt about it. Which is why it's even more important for me to find a good job and make good money. Then maybe I'll be ready. And if I'm lucky, then maybe I'll be able to find a new wife.
He's grinning a little now. It's a new look for him, and it works. A half a mile away, a few men are busy digging in the soft, wet earth. Standing next to them is Samiruddin, the man from the beginning of this story, the one who was uneasy about returning to Pukenbada, but couldn't quite explain why. In the grass next to Samiruddin is a long yellow zippered bag. In it is the body of his brother, Marwadi, missing since the tsunami. A man clearing debris found the body a few hours earlier, about a mile from here. The dead man's identity card and driver's license were found along with him. Their task completed, the men kneel next to the grave as a village elder leads them in prayer. The dead man's 16-year-old son weeps softly, his palms turned toward the sky. When the brief ceremony is over, the men start drifting away. Samiruddin drapes his arm over his nephew's shoulder and steers him gently toward the road. It's better this way, he says. Now at least we have a grave where we can come and pay our respects. Before, he says, we never knew. Samiruddin straps on his helmet and rides away. He's got many tasks to complete before he picks up his son, Yusuran, from school. 7 months on, things are getting better, but there are constant, heartbreaking reminders of how much has been lost. Michael Sullivan, NPR News.
And you can find Michael's previous reports on Pukenbada at npr.org.